Nothing lights us up more than helping people grow their wealth through multifamily investing in a way that actually feels good and makes sense where they are right now. That's exactly why we created the Where Am I Now Multifamily Assessment.
Here's the thing, no two journeys ever look the same. Maybe you're just starting out and simply curious about what's possible. Maybe you're dipping your toes into your really first passive investment, or maybe you're craving that behind the scenes peek at how it all works.
You might even be gearing up to go big and acquire your first deal, or ready to scale your portfolio to new heights by teaming up with strong partners who can help you grow like never before.
Instead of tossing you one size fits all advice, boring and not helpful, this assessment zooms in on your exact stage of growth.
It helps us get to know your goals, your challenges, and what gets you most excited about building wealth through multifamily investing, so we can hand over the tools, resources, and support that actually moves the needle for you.
The best part? It only takes a few minutes, but the clarity you walk away with, that's the magic. Think of it as your roadmap to what's next.
Ready? Head to kittysisters.com/whereaminow to get started. That's kittysisters.com/whereaminow.
Here in the US, I realized that when I was in high school, it's not about being number one in school to be successful in life. Mm. I realized it's networking and connections and friends.
You realized that in high school?
I realized that in high school. It's social skills, your ability to talk to people, that is the most important.
And if you think of today, like most of the rich people in this country or in the world, they're not the smartest one or got the best grades. They're probably C students. The soft skills are what's important. It's how life was like in the Philippines before you came to the United States.
We didn't even have hot water. So, you know, whenever we take a shower or a bath, we'd actually have to boil water on the stove and actually put it in the tub so we can take a bath and take a shower. Crime is very prevalent and all that stuff. In our schools, there's a security entrance on one side. And then as you go inside, there are these security guards that are walking around with AK-47.
Oh, seriously? In like even primary school?
Security guards. It's completely different from the United States.
When you were there, how old were you when you lived in the Philippines?
I was born there. And when we left, I was 12 years old.
Was it weird to see those guards with all those really heavy machinery?
No, I thought it was normal. You know, you kind of just go to school and that's what you see every day. And you know, you don't think anything different of it.
Were you taught to be more cautious of your surroundings?
You have to be very observant. You have to be very aware of your surroundings. Mm-hmm. It's funny because it actually trains you as you get older to just read the room when you go in. And a lot of people lack that.
That's Dane, a girl whose childhood was defined not by comfort, but survival. Imagine boiling water on a stove just to take a bath, walking past guards with AK-47s just to go to school, and learning before you learn anything else that danger was something you adapted to, not escape from. Most people never experience that level of intensity in their entire lives. But for Dane, it was Tuesday. But this isn't a story about tragedy. It's a story about trajectory. Because somehow, through a twist of timing, fate, and a decades-long promise finally fulfilled, Dane found herself on a plane to America. A new world, a new beginning, a new chance, even if nothing about that chance came easy. And here's where her story becomes extraordinary. Most people who come from hardship carry the weight forever. Dane carried the wisdom. Instead of shrinking in rooms where people had more, she studied them. Instead of resenting the ease others live with, she asked herself, what would it take for me to get there too? Instead of letting scarcity define her, she let it sharpen her. This is a part of the immigrant story we rarely talk about. The moment when survival instincts evolve into strategy, where hyper-awareness becomes a superpower, when a child who grew up reading danger learns to read opportunity. And what happened next? How Dane turned those instincts into identity and that identity into upward momentum is something you have to hear to believe. This is a story about rising when every reason around you says stay small, about choosing aspiration over envy, about proving that where you start has nothing to do with where you're destined to end up. Because as Dane shows us, your circumstances can shape you, but they don't get to script you. This is the Immigrant Millionaire Investors, a movie rewriting what's possible and proving that immigrants don't just come here to survive, they come here to rise. I hope you enjoy it. Let's dive in.
Hello, I'm Pommy.
And I'm Nancy. Together we make the Kitty Sisters. We're apartment syndicators, entrepreneurs, and educators with big dreams and a $300 million multifamily apartment portfolio. We're into helping successful entrepreneurs and founders who have a passion for real estate and $100K to $5 million to invest, all aiming to turn their business profits into a lasting legacy through income-producing asset investment.
This is Cashflow Multipliers, a podcast dedicated to your financial freedom and the lifestyle you deserve.
Dan, can you tell us a little bit about how life was like in the Philippines before you came to the United States?
Yes. So my family lived in a two-bedroom house, no AC at all. I don't know if you guys know where the Philippines is, but it's right on the equator. Very, very hot. There's no AC at all. We didn't even have hot water. So, you know, whenever we take a shower or a bath, we'd actually have to boil water on the stove and actually put it in the tub so we can take a bath and take a shower.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a third world country, very poor. Mm-hmm. It's interesting because there are a lot of things that people take advantage of here in the United States that's not available over there. You know, just like free education in the Philippines, you have to pay for your education. You have to go to the private schools. The most interesting thing is we have a lot of security in schools.
Oh, wow.
It's very interesting. There is, just because it's a very poor country, you know, kidnapping is prevalent. Wow. And, crime is very prevalent and all that stuff. And so, you know, in our schools, we have like two gates and there's a security entrance on one side. And then as you go inside, there are these security guards that are walking around with AK-47.
Oh, seriously?
Yeah.
In like even primary school.
It's just, yeah, private school, like everywhere you go. Even malls have security guards.
With guns.
Armed wow. Security guards. And public transportation that we have, I have been in them and I would just see, you know, people pickpocketing. There was one woman who was wearing like a gold necklace, and suddenly someone would just grab the gold necklace out of their neck. Wow. And then just run. It's completely different from the United States.
So like when you were there, how old were you when you lived in the Philippines?
So I was born there. And when we left, I was 12 years old.
And you had siblings as well?
Yes, I have two sisters. I was the middle child. Mm-hmm. Yeah, one was, one was older and one was younger.
So you guys went to school basically together?
Yes.
Was it weird to see those guards with all those really heavy machinery and guns?
Yeah, no, not really. I thought it was normal. You know, you kind of just go to school and that's what you see every day. And, you know, you don't think anything different of it.
Were you taught to be more cautious of your surroundings? Because if there's kidnappings,
you have to be very observant. You have to be very aware of your surroundings. Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of interesting because I feel like, you know, now that I'm in the U.S., I'm always watching, you know, what's going on around me, mm-hmm. which when I was younger, I thought it was just, you know, something that you...
It's like natural.
Yeah.
It's natural.
Yeah. But it's funny because it actually trains you mm-hmm. as you get older to just read the room when you go in. And a lot of people lack that.
Like 99%.
Yes, 99% of people lack that.
That's really interesting that was the scenario. So what were your parents doing? Because you were a kid when you came here. What were your parents doing in the Philippines?
So my mom was a stay-at-home mom.
Yeah.
She was taking care of us three kids. Mm-hmm. And then my dad was working for the Central Bank of the Philippines.
Okay.
And then later on, he became a manager for a company.
Mm, okay. And what was the trigger point that caused you guys to migrate to the United States?
My mom's entire family basically was already here.
Oh, okay.
And so she was petitioned. Mm-hmm. I believe it took 30 years. It took her 30 years to actually come to the United States. Wow. Yeah, we waited such a long time to do that.
So basically she was a kid when like her parents or her siblings moved to the United States.
Yes, yes.
And like she was willing to wait.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so how did they announce that they were coming to the United States? What was that moment like? Did they just like nonchalantly like, hey, we're moving?
I feel like my mom has always told us. No. So, you know, I was 12 mm-hmm. when we got the letter.
Yeah.
That we're allowed to migrate to the United States. But this whole entire time, she even taught us to, like, our first language was English.
Ah, so she was just
prepping. So she was already prepping us. She already knew that we were going to go to the United States. But for, you know, for my lifetime, it took 12 years.
Yeah.
So we knew it was coming. We just didn't know when.
And was the wait, like, wearing on her at all? Did you notice anything about, like, because 30 years of waiting is, like, you know.
It was definitely a long time. I feel like, you know, every single time you have a child, you kind of just like wait a little bit more.
Mm-mm.
And I honestly don't know how mm-hmm. that works out. But it was funny because it was to the point, it seemed like it was, you know, some kind of miracle that it came about, because at that point my dad lost his job.
Okay.
And so we were already struggling and we were living off of my parents' savings mm-hmm. during that time.
Yeah.
And for some kind of miracle, the letter came
just
in time. It's like the perfect timing.
Yeah.
And yeah.
And then, like, what was the celebration like when that, I mean, like, I'm sure that was like the lottery kind of.
Right. Yeah. Well, of course, you know, we didn't have any money at all. So we're just.
Like, scream young.
Yeah. We were just like, oh my gosh, this happened. I can't believe this happened. Because it was honestly, you know, it's perfect timing.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it happens like that a lot. I don't know, like, some sort of, for me, like, I always feel like when we need something the most, some miracle happens.
Yeah.
That's really,
it's the Hail Mary. It always happens at the very last moment. Yeah.
Okay. So then, like, packed up, start packing. Like, how long until you actually left the Philippines?
I think.
Since the letter.
Oh, I don't know. I don't remember. I was 12 years old. It's probably maybe a month.
Okay. So it was like,
wrapping. And it was the craziest thing just because we had pets.
Oh, okay.
We had three dogs and a rabbit.
Mm.
And it's, you know, and it's, you know, one of those things is like, oh, who's going to get this? And, you know, who's going to take care of our pets?
Yeah.
So, you know, that was sad. But, you know, now, I mean, it's definitely a better life. So,
yeah. And so when you came here, like, was that your first plane ride?
That was my very first plane ride. Yes.
How was that, like, that whole process?
It was nerve wracking. You know, we didn't know what to expect, but we, you know, we just followed, you know, my parents' lead and kind of just.
So, like, did you feel like, wow, ride was like endless, it keeps going? Because I mean, the Philippines, the United States,
yeah, we stopped by Japan.
Yeah.
So that was the very first country that I ever visited. Japan.
Good choice.
Right. I know, it's great. Japan, I felt like from the Philippines to Japan, I feel like I got, you know, launched into the future because everything was just in the future in Japan. And that was 2016. No, sorry, 1996. That was 1996, and I felt like it was like 2050. It was just, I was like, what is going on? What is it? Like, everything was glass. Everything was so futuristic. And it was funny because so we went to Japan, and then after that, went to the United States, which kind of brought us back to like in time, like in the time machine.
Like,
yeah, I know. It was like the Philippines, and then like Japan, which is like, it was insane. And then United States, which is what, like, went back in time again.
What city did you guys land in?
We went to Sterling, Virginia.
Yeah. Oh, so immediately to Virginia.
Yeah.
So was that like your, because your family lives there?
Yes, my family lives there.
Did you stay with them for a while? Who was it? Like your aunt?
It was my uncle.
Okay.
So this always happens with immigrant communities where you have the grandparents live in the house, the parents live in the house, the cousins. And then of course, you know, we came in and we kind of just like stayed in the house for probably like a year or two.
Well, okay.
So it was tough because I think it was like only a 4-bedroom house.
How many people was that? So you already had like 6 or something.
So there's 4 of us.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. There's 5 of us in our family.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And then we went to my uncle's house and there's 4 of them. So that's 8.
Wow.
And then my grandparents and my aunt who has Down syndrome.
10. So how? 11. 11 people.
11 people in like 1, 2, 3. Yeah. 4-bedroom house.
Wow.
So it was. Yeah. I was sleeping in a pullout couch.
Oh, wow.
During that time. And we did that for, we did that for 1 or 2 years.
And how was the cultural shock of like, here's where, I'm sure you have an imagination, like, what it's going to be like, and then like the reality.
Yeah. No, I have no idea. So, you know, in the Philippines, I thought I was rocking it, you know, like I was like the popular girl in the Philippines, you know, like really good grades and all of that stuff. I went to the US, I have no idea like what to expect.
Yeah.
And so I went there and it was, I mean, I'm 12 years, you know, I was 12.
Yeah.
I got here 2 months later. I was 13. And I think 3 days after we arrived, I went to school.
Oh, they were like.
So there was like, yeah, you're like, break, school, go. And it was such a shock. It was such a shock, complete shock. Went there. And this was, of course, middle school too. So, you know, oh my God.
Oh, what grade is that?
So I was in sixth grade.
Sixth grade.
Yeah, okay. I was in sixth grade. So I went there middle school. And it was funny because I remember a math class.
Yeah.
In the Philippines, when the teacher walks into the classroom, everyone stands up and says, good morning, Miss Kabotahe.
Yeah.
And then everyone, they sit down, right? Completely different in the United States. Yeah. No one stands up and they kind of just, you know, sit down. And so I would, you know, teacher would ask a question. I'd raise my hand and I remember standing up to answer the question.
Mm-mm.
And I remember the teacher coming after, you know, class and saying like, oh, we don't stand up when we answer
questions. And I was like, oh, okay. And I was like, okay, so that's, you know, one of the cultural differences. Everything like colloquial language, yeah. All of that stuff. I remember going to, it was the first day of school. So I remember going to the cafeteria,
yeah.
And, you know, I didn't know how much things were. Of course, like,
oh,
you know, if you think about, if you think about money exchanges, you don't think that like $1 equals 50 pesos. So you can't, you really don't know how much things, you know, cost.
Yeah.
So I was in at the lunch, you know, getting food. And at the very end, she said, I don't know what she's, I honestly completely forgot what she said, but you know, I gave her money and it was missing a nickel.
Uh-huh.
Right.
Yeah.
And she said, oh, I need a nickel. And I was like, oh, what's a nickel? Like, what's a nickel? I was like, and so I was staring at her. I was like, what is it? You know, she didn't say 5 cents.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, you know, so she didn't say, you know, 5 cents. Like, I knew English
because
they taught it in the Philippines. But, you know, things like that, like a nickel, a dime, like, what does that mean? You know, if you say 10 cents, I know exactly what it means.
Yeah.
If you say 5 cents, I know exactly. But a nickel, I was like, so I was just staring at her because I didn't know if there's like supposed to be a key that I was supposed to give her or something, like, oh, what is this, the nickel, you know? So they're staring, and then everyone was looking at me, like, the lunch line, they're like, come on. And I was like, and I just grabbed my purse and I did this, like, I have like all the coins, and then she grabbed it herself. So I was like, okay, well, that's great. And just finding friends, because, you know, I mean, you don't have any friends during that time. And so
were there any other Filipino in your school?
I don't think so. I feel like I was still sheltered during that time. But like finding, you know, where to sit down. And this is actually really funny, but opening the milk box.
Oh, okay.
Because it's like in the Philippines, you just have that tiny hole that's an element and you pierce it.
Yeah.
The milk box, you have to like squeeze it forward this way and squeeze it out.
It's like,
and so I was like, I don't know how to do this. And people were staring at me because I was just like, I was like, do I rip this open? But, you know, of course, there's this one girl that was so nice. She was like, let me help you.
But, you know, what is interesting, like what you said, is like
everything.
Like the Philippines if you think of the Philippines as a developing country,
right.
There's modern some developments that are like more modern than the United States.
Right.
And like for us to just be able to like this.
Right.
And, like think about like a little kid, like, yeah, flip it this way. And it doesn't open.
Sometimes it doesn't open.
I have layers of paper still stuck there. I'm like, oh, this is stuff. Just like they never improved it from the 60s or something.
I know. I don't understand it. And you know, it's funny because there are some things that I knew in the Philippines.
Yeah.
And it would come a lot later.
Yeah.
Oh, this is actually really funny.
Yeah.
But the Backstreet Boys.
Yeah.
Were in the Philippines.
Okay.
First, they grew up. Came here in the United States. They didn't know about the Backstreet
Boys.
They blew up. And so I realized is that, so they would blow up in Asia first.
Oh.
And then and it doesn't make sense because they're American.
Right.
And then they would blow up in the United States.
So you knew about them way before America.
I knew about them. And I think probably like 6 months later, that's when they came out. I don't know.
Yeah.
But I remember my cousins who were born here. They were all about the Spice Girls for that time. So they were singing these songs. And what we honestly, I didn't really know anything about the Spice Girls in the Philippines during that time. But then afterwards, you know, like NSYNC came out and then Backstreet Boys came out. So
that was like you going to school immediately. So what were your parents doing when they first landed?
Are you talking about like work or stuff?
Like were they just hanging out for a bit?
Yeah. So in Sterling, Virginia, there is a massive airport, Dulles Airport.
Okay.
My uncles work there.
Ah, okay.
And I feel like everyone worked there. So my parents work there as well.
Yeah. So they were able to get jobs very easily.
Yeah. I think it was pretty quick. I think it was pretty quick.
Didn't take long. So how was life like? So you stayed with your uncle's family for a year and a half and then you guys moved out.
And then we moved out to a really dinky little townhouse.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was because it was three bedrooms. My younger sister and I shared a bedroom. Mm. And then my sister's bedroom was like a closet. It was so tiny.
Oh,
yeah.
Really?
It was just, yeah, they have one of those tiny little townhouses. And then it was just so small.
So like you open it up.
Fits the bed.
It barely fits the bed. Like you open the door and the door hits the bed. Mm-hmm. But it was also, it's not even like a full size bed. It's a twin bed. You open the door and the door barely opens because it hits the bed.
Okay, yeah. I can imagine how, basically not.
And I don't even know, the builders that built that townhouse. Like, why would they create that small? I mean, I guess for more units.
So like, okay, and how was life like when you moved out on your own? For you, your family, what was that like?
I thought it was great.
So you were like with your family. Now you guys are on your own. Like, was that like a different adjustment that you had to make? And like, how was the family dynamic? Did it change at all from the Philippines to the United States? Or how was that experience? Like, for example, you went from having no hot water. Now you're living in a small place, but it has like all these.
No, it was great.
Comfort amenities.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, it was great. I don't have to boil water anymore. I don't have to wait like 20 minutes to take a shower because we're boiling water. Yeah, I thought it was good. But you know, later down the line, I also realized that I wouldn't say that we were middle class at all. Like I feel like we barely made it. I think it was paycheck to paycheck.
Yeah.
2 years later, my parents had a divorce.
Okay.
And my dad actually started working at Macy's, mm-hmm. and my mom was trying to get child support from him, mm-hmm. and he was being paid $7 an hour at Macy's, mm-hmm. so he was also barely making it by himself.
Yeah.
So it was really tough. My mom ended up depending on churches to get Christmas presents, clothes.
Yeah.
We were lucky because this church that we went to, this one woman was, she owned a school.
Okay.
And I don't know why, but she offered us a scholarship, I think for 2 years in her private school.
Wow.
And so we went to private school, even though my mom was barely making anything. I think my mom was making $9 an hour or something where she was working. And it was tough. It was interesting because the people who were going to the private school, you know, their families are middle class, upper middle class. And I feel like I stuck out like a sore thumb.
Yeah.
Because the clothes that I was wearing were the clothes that were donated by the church. Uh-huh. And so I was wearing the exact same thing. The good thing about it is that they had uniforms.
Yeah.
So 4 out of 5 days I was wearing a uniform. So no one really knew that I was, you know, and then the fifth day it was like casual Fridays and I would wear like the exact same clothes that I wore last Friday.
Oh, wow.
It was tough. It was really tough.
Especially when you're a young girl. Because you want to fit in.
You want to fit in. You know, everyone wanted to go to the movies and all of that stuff. And I would ask my mom, he can get money from movies and go bowling. And, you know, like I said, they were upper middle class. And so the difference was very stark with what they're able to do and what I could do. In high school, I went to public school. Mm-hmm. And so it was still a little odd because, you know, I was still wearing clothes that I wore in middle school. Mm. And I didn't really have a lot of variety. So I was kind of just like rotating the same exact clothes. Like we weren't doing really well. Like I couldn't even buy like a senior ring.
Oh,
the high school ring.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I couldn't buy the yearbook.
You didn't buy?
I didn't buy like my senior year.
Yeah.
I got one.
Yeah, yeah.
And that was because I started working junior, senior. So I was able to kind of just afford and, you know, buy things on my own.
Yeah.
But of course, you're also earning like you're a teenager. Yeah. So you're earning like $8
an hour. You're not working full time.
And you're not working full time. You're working like 3 days.
So we could get all of that stuff.
Yeah.
How did you view your parents? Like UK, United States, it seems like there's still a lot, maybe in some ways more struggle because now you're relying on like churches, clothes and like a lot of.
Yeah, it's tough.
So was it like emotionally, did you ever feel like I should have stayed back? Like, this is not better.
No, it was interesting. There's a lot more experiences here in the United States that I had.
Yeah.
And I feel like if I stayed in the Philippines, I wouldn't be able to, you know, experience.
Yeah.
One of my favorite jobs when I was, you know, when I was a teenager was working at this country club.
Ah, okay.
Again, you know, I was the beverage cart girl.
Okay.
And so
a lot of tips.
I got a lot of tips. I had a lot of tips. relatives. But it's one of those things, again, where I'm just, I can see the stark difference, between where I am and these people that are living a different life.
Even more so than your classmates now.
Even more so than my classmates. And so, I don't know, it was just really interesting. But I think, you know, just being around that environment and seeing, you know, how people are, how people act and, you know, just their general personalities and how happy they are kind of made me gravitate towards that. I'm like, I want to be just like these people. Like I, you know, these people seem so happy and nice and kind and gracious and, you know, just very, very giving.
Yeah.
So I think those first experiences that I've had actually shaped me a little bit.
Yeah.
And also, like what I said earlier, my ability to kind of just read the room when I'm inside and see where danger is coming from and what people are doing. Yeah. I think that helped me a lot to propel myself forward.
When you saw these people, like even your classmates or the people at the country club, and like they had basically unlimited of everything.
Right.
Like what were your first thoughts? Did it make you feel like, man, why do I not have those things? Or like, did you ever feel any kind of feeling like that? Or like resenting that, like, why can't we have
things? It's funny because like you can be resentful.
Yeah.
Or you can say, this is my goal.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And I'm just like, I'm going to go after this. Okay. This is where I want to be. This is, you know, I am going to work so hard so that I won't be where I am right now. Mm-hmm. I'm going to work so hard so I could be
in that room.
Yeah. Like, you know, hanging out with these people and just being, you know, this type of person. So.
And was that the case for your siblings as well?
So my siblings actually, I feel like they have a different path that they took.
Yeah.
You know, I think they kind of just, I feel like I was the rebellious kid.
Okay.
I was the middle child. I was like my mom said I was black sheep, but because she would say things, you know, and it's all about mindset.
Yeah.
You know, mindset with money and mindset with, you know, you have the scarcity. I think we were talking about this yesterday. We have the scarcity mindset and the abundance mindset.
Yeah.
And, you know, and it's funny because my mom always like wants to keep things. You know, after going to church, after, you know, hanging out with these people in the private school, in the country club, they're very generous.
Yeah.
They always help everyone else. Mm-mm. They don't care about, you know, they don't care about nickeling and diming.
Yeah.
They kind of just like help you out.
Yeah.
And, you know, with that, I saw, you know, there's definitely a difference because my mom always nickel and dime everything and then made sure that everything is, you know, accounted for.
Yeah.
And if she could take things more than she would. Whereas it's the whole thing about the law of generosity.
Yeah.
And I learned that later. The more that I give away, the more that I provide for people, it ends up coming back to you.
So like that's a really interesting contrast because like, of course, your mom's experience is she has three girls to feed.
Yeah.
She has to make sure like everything, like she has no safety net to fall back on.
Right.
And that actually speaks to where you are financially.
Right.
And so like the aspiration isn't to stay in like the middle class mindset where you're like, hey, you need to like lock things in. But like actually the more money you make, it's easier to feel generous
because
you're like, well, I have like plenty more coming.
Right.
You know, like, so I think like that contrast. So like, so that your experience is very unique because you were able to see the privileged life and like aspire to be like that.
Right.
And I think you having lived in an area where you could work at a country club is significant because that made it so that you were like what I heard the other day about drifting, like you don't have to be the person leading the track, but you drift because you're so close to them, you're going to be drifted into that lane.
Right.
Much easier than someone who's like standing like super far away.
Yeah.
So then like, okay, so I think you were good students in the Philippines. Were you also a good student in the United States?
Yes. So it's kind of funny because in the Philippines, when I switched schools, for some reason, I thought the second school that I went to was a little bit easier than the first school that I was I was in. And I was like number one. And for some reason, I was number one in, you know, class. And it got a lot of attention. Mind you, I was a middle child. So I never got attention when I was young. I never got attention from my family. And so for some reason I got addicted to success. I was like, I got addicted to being number one. Like I really want to be number one in school. I really want to be, you know, I mean, they voted me class class president. Oh, is the MC in, you know, school productions and all of that stuff. Like, you know, the teachers. Yeah, I was very, very, very involved. And, you know, the teachers always kind of just like grabbed me as, you know, the person leading, you know, just public speaking and all of that stuff. I was speaking for like 200, 300 people.
Yeah.
I just got addicted to it. I was like, wow, this is great. This is, you know, this is what I want to do. And it's funny because, like I said, I was addicted to be number one.
Mm-hmm.
Here in the US, I realized that when I was in high school,
mm-hmm.
it's not about being number one in school to be successful in life.
Mm.
It's not, you know, it's not about studies anymore.
Yeah.
I realize it's networking and connections and friends. Mm. So that's one of the things that you need to develop.
You realize that in high school?
I realized that in high school. For some reason, I don't know why and how, and I'm trying to figure out how I came up with that. So I think I was number one. I was at the valedictorian of high school, you know, kind of just like looking at everything. Ranked number one freshman year, sophomore year.
Yeah.
Junior year, I think, is when I realized school is not going to make me rich. Or wealthy or anything like that.
Yeah.
It's social skills.
Yeah.
Your more like social skills, like your ability to network.
Yeah.
Your ability to talk to people.
Mm.
That is the most important. And it's funny because my mom, and this is why I was, you know, talking about, I was like the black sheep, but my mom was like, no, study, 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 school, you need to get straight A's and all of that stuff. I was still getting good grades. Like, you know, I didn't go to like a D student or anything like that. But I realized that, you know, I was awkward. You know, I was an awkward kid because that's basically what I was looking at. You know, my goal was school, straight A's, 4.0, you know, A plus, straight A pluses and all of that stuff. That was my goal. But then I couldn't relate to people as much because I just went school, home.
So like no social.
So no social.
Yeah.
My mom was like, forget the friends. You just need school. And so I went against everything my mom said. And I feel like that's basically Asian culture too.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's just like school, forget the friends. You need to go 4.0, all of that stuff. But it's not it.
It's,
you
so
know,
true.
It's so true because like I said, it's the people you're around with. Like it's the mixing of ideas that actually propel you forward in life.
Yeah.
If I just did, you know, calculus the entire time, that is not going to, you know, keep me out of the grind. Like, you know, you have to, it's the exchange of ideas that actually propels you.
That's a really, like to have that kind of wisdom at such a young age. You know, I would say 99% of the entire globe today don't understand that.
Yeah.
Because like, and if you think of today, like, most of the richest people, and you don't have to go to like, you know, global level, but most of the rich people in this country or in the world,
right?
They're not the smartest one or got the best grades. They're probably like C students.
Right. Yep.
Yep. Because those aren't the soft skills are what's important. It's not like.
Yes. Yeah, I agree.
Like
I do have to say that. So it's like a Venn diagram with this thing because, you know, some people are just like, oh, it's okay. I'm going to be a C student. No. You shouldn't be a C student. Yeah. So it's a Venn diagram. So it's actually like the intersection of it. There is a large percentage of entrepreneurs are C students, but not a large percentage of C students are entrepreneurs.
So there's characteristics of those specific people.
Yes. So those people, those C students, those are the ones that are smart, but then they realized that school is not the most important thing.
Mm-mm.
So, you know, with that said, you shouldn't thrive to be a C student.
Don't be a C student.
Do not be a C student.
On purpose.
You know, the very top of your goal should not be knowing every single information out there.
Yeah, like memorizing the periodic.
Yes. Or something like that. No. Yeah. It's basically knowing where to get the information is a lot more important than knowing the information.
Yeah. So it's like timely knowledge at the moment you need it.
Yeah. Yeah.
So like the thing that we like to talk about is like, of course, you have a successful dental practice, but like beyond that, what are some of the other things you're doing investment wise that is helping you not stay in the grind, not have to, you know, like so you have the money work for you instead of just.
So this is actually really interesting. So I decided to go, you know, and be a dentist, even though money is not guaranteed. Right. Well, money is that meaning the school for the schooling part.
Mm.
you know, I didn't even know what I wanted to be when I was in college. And I didn't even know what college I need to go to. And this is what makes, I feel, this is what makes America great. Mm. Like someone like me, okay, no money, parents don't have any money. Mm-hmm. You can get loans.
Yeah.
You can get loans. You can ask work from the college. Mm-mm. And then you can also work during college to actually help pay for your living expenses.
Yeah.
Like my mom never contributed to anything that we have. I got scholarships. I got grants.
Yeah.
And, you know, I worked
at
my college and basically worked outside of my college to actually just provide for myself.
Wow.
That wouldn't have happened in the Philippines at all.
Mm-mm.
You know, I would have, you know, both my parents, well, my dad is just a high school graduate.
Yeah.
And then my mom, she had like some kind of associate's degree.
Yeah.
And so it's really tough. You need to, you definitely have, you know, money and backing to actually go through college. And then after that, even going to dental school.
Yeah.
It was just, you know, I didn't have anything either.
Mm-mm.
And then for some reason made it, got into the situation where, you know, of course there are dental students out there whose parents have money.
Yeah.
And, you know, my roommate, like her parents are pediatrician in New York City.
Oh.
And, you know, so it's just like being around that and kind of just like talking to them, speaking to them and, you know, trying to figure out like how their culture is. And I don't know, it's just interesting. So I feel like if you have a goal, it's exactly, you know, I know we're in Grant Cardone's master class the other day.
Yeah.
He said, you know, if you want to be on a yacht, you know, if you want to own a yacht, just work, you know, go close the proximity to it. Like own a yacht. Not own a yacht. if you want to own a yacht or you want to be in a yacht, you know, you can surround yourself with people who like
goes on yachts.
Yeah, goes on yachts or
rent an hour
work,
on a yacht.
Work on a yacht.
Work
like be yourself in there in that position and everything is
like
is
your mindset is really the one that like the biggest takeaway I feel from our talk today is that like the uniqueness is like you have to carry that mindset. And I want the audience to realize like you also can have this mindset. It's like the reason Dana is important on this podcast is because she needs to be like an inspiration where it's a very small pivot.
Right.
That someone needs to make if where you are today in your life to recognize like that. Don't take it as like a pity party. Like I don't have anything and they have all this stuff.
It's, right.
Oh, there's a pathway for me to have what they have.
Yep.
And now that I've experienced a small piece of that life, I'm going to make sure that I do whatever is in my power to get to that point.
Right. Yes.
Instead of like absolutely. Dwelling in like my misery, like not getting anywhere.
Right. And there's always a way.
Yeah.
There is always a path.
Yeah.
You might not get it now,
mm-mm.
but break it up into steps and kind of just figure out how to get there. And the other thing too, I would say, is just be open to opportunities.
Mm.
You know, look for opportunities.
But that's because of your skill. I also believe that because your observant skill,
right.
that's like your magical power, because you're able to pick up the pattern of things. Like you connect the dots. That's like the power that you have, that you're like the one thread that runs through this is like you can be in a room and you can observe like this is what happened, like this is what I need to do to get to that point.
Right.
Yep. Yeah. That's quite amazing. I always ask everyone who comes on, like, what was something that you brought in your suitcase when you came to the United States that's like, and it doesn't have to be anything like massive. It's just like something that you brought. It could be a physical thing. It could be like, it has sentimental value. Like someone brought they brought rice to the United States, like literally rice in a rice cooker.
That's so funny.
Because he was like, he had $40 and he was like, if I don't survive, at least I have food for the next few days to get through, you know? Like, so like my sister on her study abroad took a to Australia because she's a dork to do things that like she won't have something cook like I know you were a kid, but like were there anything that you brought that you still remember as being like something unique that the audience may be like, oh, I didn't think you would have brought that?
This was actually sad, but I brought a picture of my dog.
And I understand why would have been so sensitive.
He was a good dog. He was a really good dog. And it was really sad. He was able to stay with someone, which, you know, really good. I mean, I was
a teen. I mean, if he was wrong, someone, by a family or a friend, then...
It was a neighbor.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a neighbor. So
he
was good.
He didn't have to adjust too much.
I don't think so. So my neighbor took the bunny, I remember. But my mom's best friend moved into
your place.
Our house.
Yeah. So basically, H didn't have to really adjust to a new
H didn't have to adjust.
And dogs, by the way, like I've adopted dogs.
Yeah.
Like overnight, they adjust to new families. As long as you're kind of nice, they're good.
Yeah.
So
they're good. They're good. They're good.
So that's like you're kind of linked to your childhood.
Yes.
That's amazing. Thank you so much. So thanks for sharing your story. And
yeah,
I hope that this inspires other people to, if you, wherever you are in the journey, if you're coming here, if you aspire to come here, if you're already here, the things that, you know, Dane has is the ability to positively see things that are negative, but make it into a positive, because you're able to understand that it's about delayed gratification.
Yes.
That like, hey, it's going to happen for me. I'm not going to get there in one day, and be patient and understand that it's going to take time.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me.
Really fun. Thanks for opening up. It's a lot of
stuff. No, that's great.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yay. How was it? We can't wait to begin this journey with you. Check us out at thekittysisters.com/podcast.